The Athletic FC Podcast Network.
Hello, I am Taylor Payne. This is Pod on the Tyne, your dedicated Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic FC. We are back and I've got three lovely chaps with me today. We've got Chris Woff. How the devil are you, Chris?
I'm very nervous ahead of Friday. Friday's a big day for us, isn't it?
It's a huge day, Chris. It's a massive day. More on that later on, obviously. But yeah, there's a frisson in the air, isn't there? There's tension, there's nerves.
Yeah, I mean, primarily because I have to see you lot, but beyond that, yeah. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not bad at all. Jacob Whitehead's here. Jacob, how are you, son?
I'm good. I'm warmed up. I'm ready to, defend my team, both of my teams, on the podcast today.
Defend the indefensible, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you can hear, George Corkin's here as well. How are you, George? Have you done your stretches? Are you limber? Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm as ready as I'll ever be. I'm slightly concerned about Chris looking ahead to Friday. You've got to concentrate on the opposition in front of you. You've got to, you know, you've got to focus on the immediate and, you know, don't take your eyes off the ball, Chris. We've got a big pod coming up today. Big pod.
He's had his head turned by the bright lights, George. That's what it is. He's had his head turned. Absolutely. Needs to focus on the here and now, doesn't he? Right then, let's talk about that game at Goodison Park. Everton, Saturday, late kickoff. One man who's not going to miss Goodison Park, Anthony Gordon. Was very good in open play, drew loads and loads of fouls, but even when central, Jacob, he's not really a striker, is he? And he had a bit of a forgettable afternoon.
Fouls is one way to put it.
Oh, here we go. We're starting already, are we?
Early minutes, you got to sort of, you know, go into exchanges with a sort of really what you want.
Fouls. Let the opposition know you're there.
Exactly. Eddie Howe was obviously very defensive of Gordon after the game, as he should have been, because that penalty miss, you know why, that would have been a really difficult moment. And he did create chances. He did not manage to finish them. And he was a lot more involved than his previous two trips to Goodison Park. You know, there's that big chance at the end. Fired it over and it just felt like he was affected.
Jacob, can I interrupt you slightly? Are you trying to impersonate Sean Dyche on purpose? I mean, have you just spent too long in his company over the weekend?
As you're morphing into him.
It aged me, that game.
Oh, it aged me, yeah.
It finally broke his voice.
His voice has finally broken and he's become Sean Dyche.
I've had a whole pot of tea this morning, so I'm not quite sure.
You need to gargle with some gravel.
I expected it, but...
Sorry, carry on.
I know, I think it's quite... Does it suit me?
No.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's sorted out by Friday. Clearly a tough afternoon for Gordon. I mean, what did you guys make of his overall performance? Because I thought that aside from the misses, kind of although he was involved, it didn't necessarily feel like it was really creating that cutting threat.
I think it's the same as what we've had in recent weeks with Isak and with him, is that he's just a little bit too isolated up there on his own, and I just think we weren't getting the ball into him enough.
I'd agree with that. I think when he had the ball, certainly in the first half, I think he really did create chaos for the Everton defence. I think he pulled them out of position. But the problem was that because he was coming deep or coming wide to get the ball, then when the ball did go in the box or when he did create openings, there wasn't the person in the box to actually finish them. So again, it's coming back to that lack of actual centre-forward. And I think he would have been even more effective in his favoured position on the left. And instead, he's through the middle. Still think largely positive in open play, but not actually what you need from a centre-forward. And that's because of Newcastle's lack of fit senior alternatives right now.
I totally agree with that. I thought in lots of ways he was very, very good. I thought his energy, his drive, his running was really, really important. I think if you took that out of the team, Newcastle would have struggled. I thought, you know, he set the tone. He was clearly up for it. But the headline, of course, is the penalty miss and the other misses as well.
George, do you think the penalty miss affects him for the rest of the game? Do you think it has an effect on him?
Yeah, I think probably. Yeah. And I think it affected the rest of the team as well. I mean, Newcastle didn't have a shot on target after that penalty, and that, you know, that was the big chance. But yeah, I wouldn't heap blame on Gordon. I thought he was very good against Man City the weekend before. He was clearly sort of determined to silence the crowd and kind of impose himself at Goodison. I thought he did that in lots of ways, but yeah, that's not why we'll remember him from that match, is it?
No, our pen, Chris, was a pen, wasn't it? And theirs wasn't. So Sean Dyche complained about VAR not at least having a look. The Dan Beaumont, he kicks his leg, doesn't he, and goes down. But ours, I mean, you can't be WWE wrestling people in the box and not expecting to get a penalty against you.
No, and I mean, in fairness to Dyche, he did say that one's a penalty. So he did admit that Everton should have conceded the penalty which was given by VAR. I mean, VAR took a heck of a lot of views of it. I mean, I thought it was a little bit odd, and again, this is maybe we not understand the rules, but basically, like, oh yeah, they were checking to see whether the ball was coming in the box or not. So, but he's literally just thrown him to the ground off the ball. I don't understand how, if you did that in the middle of the pitch, it's a free kick regardless of whether the ball's coming in your direction. So I think that's a weird sort of rule. I mean, I don't really understand why Tarkowski did. I mean, Tarkowski had a bit of a nightmare. He also let the ball bounce and Joe Linton run past him when he could have easily cleared it at one stage. It was, the fact that it was Sandro Tonali was confusing. If he'd done it on Dan Byrne, it still would have been ridiculous, but I sort of understand why he fears the aerial threat. But I mean, Sandro Tonali's not renowned for being a sort of really potent in the box.
Shades of the Paul Dummett one, wasn't it? Who was that against last season when he did it?
That was against Everton.
Oh, well, there you go, yeah.
That was Ashley Young, wasn't it?
Oh, Ashley Young, yeah, and he just wrestles him to the floor.
What I don't understand about it is when Sean Dyche says, in terms of the Everton non-penalty, that if that had been anywhere else in the pitch, that would have been given as a foul. Why would Dominic Calvert-Lewin kicking the back of Dan Byrne's foot be given as a foul elsewhere in the pitch? I don't understand what he means.
I think if I start off with this, I don't think it was a penalty either, but live from the angle you are on that thing, it looked very much as if he was running towards the ball and had sort of had his training leg clipped by Byrne. Obviously, then you see the replays and there's a really good angle from behind it where you can see how clearly it happens. But it's one of those which I think instinctually when you see it and you see that angle, it does look like one. And so I don't know if he's maybe not seen that replay from behind, but...
So he's probably talking about the ref, rather than VAR. And he's basically, I think what he's saying is if say that happens 20 yards higher up the pitch and you just see it live, the referee's likely to give a foul for that sort of coming together is what I assume he's trying to say. And then I assume what he's saying is then he then went on to say VAR then wouldn't overturn it. So that's what I think he's trying to say. But equally, it shouldn't, and it was the right decision, and actually a very good decision for the referee.
I think what's interesting there is that Garner Gay misses an absolute open goal, but let's say that had gone in. It's the one player you didn't want it to fall to from an Everton perspective. Would it then have been ruled out for a foul on Byrne, do you think, if he had managed to score the open goal?
Possibly.
And it's been almost overlooked. I know we're jumping ahead here, but how good a save it was from Nick Pope as well just before that. It's a very, very, very good save because it deflects off Cher as well when Calvert-Lewin manages to get the shot away. So Newcastle, despite having been absolutely dominant, nearly conceded towards the end there as well.
Speaking of goalkeepers, at the other end of the pitch, we have to talk about Jordan fucking Pickford, don't we? Let's be honest. We have to mention him at some point. Pointing at his head after the penalty as if he hasn't shit the bed numerous times against Newcastle in the past, claiming he's some kind of mental genius. I'm not sure I quite enjoyed that. But he certainly enjoyed his afternoon, didn't he, George?
Yeah, he's a really good goalkeeper. And all that, you know, that pantomime stuff is great. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. He gets, you know, let's twist that around. He gets absolute pelters in every match against Newcastle, the dinosaur stuff, the chance, you know. And he came up with a great save, the moment of the match, and it's all part of life's rich pageantry, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice to have a villain, though, isn't it?
He was man of the match in the last game as well,
back
last spring, and clearly as well got in Anthony Gordon's head for the penalty, in the sense that Gordon spoke last week sort of very proudly about how he had this England-trained process where he was always going to be in his own space for the penalty, and you see him, just before he takes it, mouthing to Pickford, left, which doesn't quite seem to be that cool-headed fighter pilot penalty training.
I think that's a good point. I wanted to mention that. I mean, firstly, I wanted to talk about my loathing now of the word process, because we've had like 3 years of process at Newcastle, haven't we? And it's like, yeah, process-driven. And then now we have Anthony Gordon's process. And yeah, it does feel like a very flawed process. I mean, it was kind of extraordinary. You have that incredibly sort of deliberate thing where he just stares at the ball. He's holding the ball. He stares at it. He puts it to his feet incredibly slowly, staring at the ball all the way. But then 10 seconds before, he's been doing that sort of like stuff you would do with your mate on the park. Left, I'm going to hit it to the left. You know, that sort of mind games thing. That's not a process. That's just like... So what is that process? Because, I mean, he then took a really bad penalty. I mean, it was a bad penalty.
It was shocking.
You know, of course that can happen. But I sort of don't understand. I mean, how can you have a process that starts with him like being cocky, arrogant, whatever he's being, and then kind of he goes into this sort of elaborate routine? What is all that about? I mean, I don't understand it. I don't understand what happened.
Just on that, Jacob, at that moment, because against Man City the week before, it was like in the stadium, I don't know how other people felt, but I thought he's scoring this. Yeah. It's just the way
didn't
that it was the
like
whole
it.
Way around
didn't feel
it.
Like he was going to miss at all, did it?
But in the actually at Goodison Park for that moment, what did you think? Was there a feeling that he's going to miss this or he's going to score this, or how did you feel at that moment?
Evertonians are incredibly pessimistic and say you just think for fuck's sake he's going to score against us. Like, you know, it's the vast likelihood. Obviously Pickford is a good penalty keeper, seen from like numerous international tournaments how good he can be, but I think you've just got to be sort of fatalistic. Oh no, that's gonna happen. I sort of think he just did it because it was so Pickford specific. Like, this is probably a player who he's taken penalties against more than any other player in the world, and he's just...
But I don't think you can go for... I do know what you mean. It's like, I'm all for piss taking on the pitch and, you know, having a laugh and those sorts of things. I mean, it's like, ostensibly, it's very funny seeing him do that. And he's like nodding his head and winking and saying, yeah, I'm going to hit it. And then, but I just don't understand how you can sort of go from something like that, which is so in the moment and caught up in the match, to then sort of try and switch your head around and be completely sort of focused. That the process is flawed, is what I'm saying. Fuck the process. Fuck the process. But that's what I'm saying.
When you mentioned Pickford pointing to his head, in fairness to Pickford, and we are relying on what he says afterwards, we haven't heard Anthony Gordon's version of events, but clearly he did get in Gordon's head because supposedly Gordon went to him at the full-time whistle and said, why did you dive that way? Yeah. So it had got, when you talk about it affecting for the rest of the match, it was something he was thinking about. That was the first thing he went to ask. So that was interesting, I thought, as well, in terms of just winning that mind game.
I saw quite a few people on social media saying Anthony Gordon shouldn't have taken that penalty and it maybe wasn't the right situation for him. Now, as a striker, if somebody came up to me and said, you shouldn't take this penalty because it's not the right situation, I would have went fucking ballistic with them and said, how dare you? Do you know what I mean? I am on penalties.
Yeah, Jacob wrote about this in his excellent match piece. So check it out. And I, you know, totally agree. I think sort of taking it away from Gordon would have been a strange thing to do. If he's the penalty taker, he's the penalty taker. I think in retrospect, he was like too worked up, give it to someone like Fabian Che who's got a cool head. But I, you know, if you have a penalty taker, you have a penalty taker, and his last one was successful. I don't see any reason to change it, but yeah.
But anyway, Newcastle had looked a bit better with the ball until the final third. That is, almost everybody was guilty, weren't they, George, of snatching at passes and crosses in attack.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling about the match isn't sort of a negative one. I mean, I thought, you know, there were moments at the start where, you know, Newcastle didn't have control, but I thought beyond that they did. I think Everton would be much happier with that draw than Newcastle were. I don't think it's a disastrous result, but the thing that we're saying, I mean, I think this is now becoming entrenched as a theme. So obviously, you know, not having Alexander Isak or Callum Wilson is a big deal, but I think it kind of goes beyond that, what we're seeing so far this season, which is that Newcastle have a mid-table record in terms of their attacking stats, their striking stats. In terms of scoring goals, they've scored more than one only twice this season in all competitions, I think I'm right in saying. And if you look at whether it's goals, XG, shots, touches in the opposition box, Newcastle are either 10th or worse. I mean, they are very much a mid-table side. And I think that was the story of Goodison. I know it's easy to say this, but I think if Isak had played, Newcastle win, and I think they win comfortably. Same with Callum Wilson, a fit Callum Wilson, and I just think that was the difference. I'm not horrified by anything that we saw except that accept that failure. It's not even a failure to take chances. It's a failure to really create those goal-scoring chances. They just didn't do it.
Jacob, were Everton actually trying to win the game? They had so few touches in Newcastle's box.
Yeah, well, this is it. To be honest, I think I slightly disagree with that analysis of Newcastle, in the sense that when you play Everton, Everton just give the ball to Newcastle. You know, they're a team who wants hit and transition. So Newcastle are always going to have a lot of control of the ball. They're going to have dominance of the ball. But Everton are kind of happy on relying for them not creating stuff in the final third. And Newcastle didn't particularly in the first half, for example. The best chances were from the penalty. And I completely forgotten what the other one was. Oh, from a set piece when Ndiaye blocked it.
What are you disagreeing with?
With the fact that Newcastle sort of did look better with the ball than they had in previous games. I think they were allowed to dominate the midfield and they didn't actually create anything with the ball in the final third, would probably be my argument. Because of the style which Everton play, they're always going to have a lot of time on the ball.
I don't really think that's a disagreement. I'm not like...
Okay, fine, we can agree.
Well, no, I disagree with you saying that we disagree.
Okay, fine.
Just a few points on that. In terms of were Everton trying to win, I turned to George at one point and I messaged Jacob, who's in the ground, and I said... I mean, I don't watch Everton every week, but they make the game look bizarre. Like, there were spells. Yeah. It's almost as if they're so rigid in what Sean Dyche wants from them. Everyone has to be in the area of the pitch that the ball would bounce between the defence and midfield. Joe Linton would pick it up, and there's no Everton player even moves. There's just a gap in the middle of the pitch, and it's that you don't see that from many Premier League sides. And it was really weird because regularly throughout the match, there were large pockets of space in different areas of the pitch where Everton didn't seem to even want to necessarily close it out. And that was really, really odd in terms of the way the game unfolded. And I don't think Newcastle did deal with it well. For all of the openings, and this is maybe actually the drawback with XG, is that I don't think the XG represents the actual volume of openings and times that Newcastle got into good positions, because their XG at the end of the game was 2.05. 0.8 of that is from the penalty. And they only had 14 shots, which actually wasn't as many as they should have had, given the dominance of territory and possession, and particularly when they got into the final third so many times, and then Joe Linton or Harvey Barnes or Murphy or Anthony Gordon even himself, or the midfielders, would just put a really poor pass in or a cross to no one, make the wrong decision.
That is genuinely what field tilt measures.
There we go.
Start with field tilt again.
Come on, you Maggies.
Bit of a theme though, isn't it? I mean, Newcastle, I've seen it a few times this season. When we're not expected to control the ball and when we're not expected to have possession, we tend to play better. We get the ball on the break and it's almost like that lack of time to do something makes us focus a bit better. When we've got more time with the ball and we've got more time and more possession, it's almost like they don't really seem to know exactly what to do with it. And we get in that final third and then a pass goes awry. The ball doesn't quite land where it needs to go. Somebody doesn't make the run at the right time. Whereas when we're counter-attacking and we're playing those balls in the channels and up the sides, Newcastle seem to have a bit more focus and they seem to know, right, we're going to head towards goal now and we're going to try and create a chance. Whereas if they've got the ball, they're knocking it around in the midfield. It's like, all right, we've got plenty of time to do this here, but then nothing actually ends up happening. That's what it feels like to me anyway, Chris. I don't know about you.
I'd agree with that, because I think that Eddie Howe's spoken before about wanting to build his midfield with athleticism, with power, with pace. And in a way, if you sit back and you don't sort of go toe-to-toe in duels, you completely negate that and you rely on them as ball players. And really, you've kind of got Bruno in that midfield three, sort of Gillinton and Tonali are much more dynamic. Everton can just sit back and, I don't know, play with all of the ambition of a goldfish in a stoner phase and just sort of let Newcastle have their way with it.
Yeah. Chris, Miguel Almiron, he's a Newcastle player until January at the very least, and he does have his useful qualities. He did put another right foot cross in within 3 minutes of getting on the pitch. It was absolute garbage, though. He seems to just add a little bit of spark, doesn't he? But the end product just isn't there the way it used to be.
No, although I thought he made an impact when he came on, and Howe referenced the substitutes again afterwards, and I do think that the substitutes made a bit of a difference for Newcastle. I thought Longstaff was largely positive as well. I thought Livramento did all right, but Miguel Almiron tried to make things happen. He's the one who played the ball through for Anthony Gordon's chance, which he skies when he should probably at least hit the target, you'd have thought, when he goes through. I mean, it's just the issue again is that Newcastle had 8 second-half shots, but none of them on target, as George mentioned, after the 35th minute, didn't actually have an effort on goal, and it was down to lack of decision, poor decision-making, or a lack of sort of killer instinct in the opposition box. And it just... I thought Miguel Almiron added a bit of energy, but again, I suppose that it comes down to that end product thing with him and the rest of the sort of Newcastle side. There's a big debate at the moment about Harvey Barnes. Is he just a finisher, for want of a better term, quote unquote? Should he be coming on rather than starting matches? Because largely, it's weird. You usually have this with the centre forward, but he will score or assist or not really be that involved in a match,
yeah,
and you definitely won't really notice him. That's very rare to have with a winger. Usually you have a winger who might infuriate, but it's because they're trying to do things. He doesn't really actually get involved as much as that. And, I mean, Murphy, I thought, was hit and miss as well. There were some decent moments, a good ball in the box with Anthony Gordon. Should have probably headed towards goal, but headed back across to Joe Linton. But then large parts of the game, he wasn't in it. I think for all of the possession and territory Newcastle had, they didn't do enough in that final third, as we've already mentioned, and that's where the sort of attacking players are all culpable within that. But we've known that Newcastle wanted a right-sided forward in the summer. They've wanted one for several windows, and they didn't bring one in. And so this is where it feels like Newcastle, in an attacking sense, maybe are beginning to stagnate. And I think it's also the same on the ball. Tonali's been brought in to try and improve Newcastle technically alongside Bruno Guimaraes, but nobody else has arrived in the last year. So is it any wonder that a side which still has a few players, certainly on the bench, but even starting in the likes of Joe Linton and Murphy, aren't actually technically good enough yet to really break down those sides that Newcastle have to in the Premier League? And I think that's been the problem. That's where it feels Newcastle are stagnating right now, if not potentially even going backwards in some of the way that they need to play.
George, Eddie Howe's spoken about finding a way to summon up better performances and energy levels on the road. Do you think he's going to see this as a step in the right direction?
Well, yes. I mean, he'll look at, you know, compared to Fulham and the last away game, keeping a clean sheet is important. You know, I agree with everything Chris has just said there. I mean, Newcastle have had like 42 touches in Everton's box there. It's not quite the case that we saw earlier this season where Newcastle strikers or forwards were being left isolated. They were getting into the right positions against Everton. It's just that they then didn't know what to do with the ball. With like the final ball, the shot was wrong. Shots going off target when they should have worked the keeper. Alan from Work described them as awful in the final third. I think that's a fair comment. But I think if you take that performance, I know you asked me about the away form, but I think if you take that performance plus staying in the League Cup, similar sort of story in the League Cup, by the way, I mean, against Wimbledon, plenty of possession, not too much jeopardy.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, kind of got snuck through it, really. But also with Man City, then you see, I think you do see signs of improvement. They should have won that match against Everton. I think, I say again, I think that's 2 points dropped. But I don't think you come away with that feeling angry or, you know, maybe a bit of disappointment. But I don't think that was a desperate performance. I think in terms of, you know, getting a point out of it and a clean sheet, that's definitely something to build on.
On the clean sheet point, again, it's almost like the match in general in terms of Newcastle's away form. You can look at it and say, well, they were against an Everton side who basically didn't even seem to want to try and score a goal. But actually, in the cool light of day, this was Newcastle's first away clean sheet in 8 Premier League games. They're second in 20 and they're third in 32. So that actually is a big moment, regardless of the opposition. That feels like something big and significant to build on. Because if Newcastle are going to get anywhere close to posting a waveform which will get them towards those certainly European positions, but even Champions League positions, they're going to have to keep clean sheets away from home and sneak some matches 1 or 2 nil. That's what they did so well in 2022-23. And so that did feel like a step forward.
More generally, we're seventh. Chris, are we happy with that?
Well, it's the weird sort of thing. I'm doing a live Q&A this afternoon, as I do every week during the Premier League season. And I've sort of, one of the things that I mentioned in the sort of intro for it is that, perversely, Newcastle started the season playing poorly and yet picking up positive results. And now they seem to be playing better and the results themselves have tailed off a little bit. And it's weird. It's almost like the two of them can't go together right now. I think it is a reasonable start. I caveat that by the fact that Newcastle's fixture list has been pretty kind so far. It's probably been one of the kindest fixture lists they've had in a long while from the start of a Premier League season. Maybe they could have had 2 or 3 more points more on the board and then you would have felt more comfortable given the fixtures that are coming up, which look a lot more challenging. And it's whether Newcastle can translate the performances, continue that they've had the last couple of games, and translate them into performances against those sides, which then produce positive results. So I think it feels very similar to the similar point in the 2022-23 season. Newcastle had only lost one game by that stage, the same as they have this time. They'd drawn far too many matches at that point. And I think it feels like the season could go either way at this point. It just depends how Newcastle can build momentum and actually keep that going. And so I would give it maybe a 7.5 out of 10 would be my analysis of the season so far in terms of taking all that into consideration.
0.5, interesting, 7.5. Not just a 7, the 7.5. Okay. That's quite a high mark, really, isn't it?
I would say it's above average, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because I think if you look at the very top of the table, you've got the three teams you would expect to be there, and then Newcastle are in and around all of the other teams who are likely to be. So in that sense, I think points-wise, I don't think Newcastle are in a terrible position, and so they have given themselves a platform to build from, despite having played in most matches, being largely unconvincing. They are in a position where they could build from, so that's why I'd put them in that bracket.
Yeah, I broadly agree with you. I mean, I think 6th, 7th, that feels about right. I mean, I think if Newcastle had won against Everton, they would have been, you know, level on points with Chelsea and Villa. I think, you know, for a long time we've longed to have a team that can get wins, get points, get positive results. We're not playing well. They're definitely doing that. And I think that's important in the context, sorry to always go on about context, but in the context of a really testing summer, difficult summer, not bringing in first team ready transfers, I think where they are is positive, and the good thing is that they've got room for improvement. We know that. We saw a glimpse of what they're capable of against Manchester City. It was important they built on that. They have done it. And I think it's sort of all to play for. I think, you know, I think internally, I've banged on about this, but I think internally for Eddie Howe to be able to say to his players, look, okay, things aren't as bad as it might have felt a few weeks ago. You know, you're good players. We're capable of competing against anybody on the day. I think that's really important that he can ram home that message. So, no, I think it's been a positive start, and there is definite room to get better as well.
And of course, we go into an international break now when we never want to see anybody get any kind of injury. But which player, Chris, would you like to pick up a little minor niggle which keeps them out of these couple of games, but gets them back in plenty of time for the league campaign?
I think Anthony Gordon, to be fair, in terms of what he's... I know he didn't score and have the perfect match at Everton, but I just think in terms of he's starting to get that intensity back and that drive, which is so important to the way that Newcastle play. So I think I'd probably go for Gordon from the players who are likely to play regularly for their international sides.
Yeah. George, any difference with that?
No, I would flip that slightly. I just think it's really important that we get Alexander Isak back. And, you know, it'd be great for Callum Wilson to, you know, to kind of be fit and firing. Well, he won't be firing at the end of the international break, but to be ready to be selected. We need a striker, and we need competition in that area. So that's what I would hope for.
I've also been enjoying Sven Botman's Instagram posts in the last couple of weeks, where he's been posting a little clock and then an arm, a strong arm. And soon, things like that, you know, cryptic. I'm not really sure what he means by that. Maybe he needs to be a little bit more explicit with what he's talking about. Yeah. Hopefully Sven Botman soon. Missed him massively. So, chaps, onto the lasses. An absolutely hideous cup draw for them. There are groups with four championship teams, and obviously we get Man United, Liverpool, both top half WSL, and Everton. Demi Stokes got us off to a flyer via Everton. We could easily have won the game. As it was, we settled for a point. Toffees left with 2 points, though, after they slaughtered us in the penalty shootout. So Everton week finishes all square, and obviously Steve Bruce rules apply, so the League Cup penalty shootout doesn't count at all, Jacob. That's right, isn't it?
I just completely reject that as a premise. It was
competition. No, Steve Bruce rules. Everton won. You know the Steve Bruce rules. Penalty shootouts don't count in the League Cup. It was a draw.
Okay. I mean, how many penalties?
We have to explain this for people who may not be familiar, but like one of the darkest days pre-takeover was a League Cup match at home to Burnley in the takeover season, and this was really a time of clutching at straws, and Steve Bruce said, well, at least we didn't get beaten tonight. And this was after a night that Newcastle had been kicked out of the League Cup on penalty. So that was the past. But this is right, though, because Newcastle do actually get points from that
a point
performance, don't they?
Fewer points.
a fewer point after a draw, after a hard-earned draw.
Yeah.
I mean, how many penalties was it Newcastle players took against Everton players over the last week?
Here we go.
I think it's five, and Newcastle didn't score a single one.
Yeah.
Mm, tough talk.
Claimed two draws.
Yeah. We do have to say, actually, as well, get well soon to Everton's Inmagabaro, their second ACL injury of the season as well. Jacob, bad luck for her, and Everton struggling with those injuries.
Yeah, looking like a tough season, bottom of the WSL at the moment, and two of our better players going to be out long term. But brighter days ahead, hopefully.
Yes, absolutely. And speaking of which, let's look forward. Proud to go toe-to-toe with the WSL's Everton, and a huge game in the Championship on Sunday against Durham. Better side in the first half, albeit physical Durham side looked dangerous. Visitors dominated the first 20 minutes of the second half, but both keepers did make great saves, George.
Yeah, they definitely did. In the end, that was, you know, arguably the difference. Claudia Mohn for Newcastle made a brilliant, brilliant save in the first half to keep Newcastle in it. It was my first match of the season, and you could just feel that there was a difference in quality there, that there was a step up in quality in terms of the Championship. And one of the sort of interesting things, one of the nice things I thought was actually, you know, there were couple of hundred of Durham fans at Kingston Park. You know, we haven't seen a lot of that sort of opposition fans. There's been a few over the past kind of couple of seasons, but, you know, Durham fans were there. They brought their banners. They brought a drummer. They were chanting and singing throughout. And you did have a real sort of feel that this was a derby match. And it was kind of great. I mean, until the end, obviously, which was a sickener. But you got a real sense that these were two good teams going at each other. I think Newcastle did themselves proud. I thought they were arguably the better team, but you know, they held their own, but they're not going to sweep away the Championship in the way that they've done in the past two campaigns. I don't think that's on the cards. But yeah, it was a good game.
You know, why Durham would have been absolutely desperate to win this, in the sense that this is a team from the northeast who have come quite close to going up to the WSL for the last five seasons, and all of a sudden you have a Newcastle United team coming up from the fourth division and trying to sort of be this new team for the northeast. And it would rile you up if you're a Durham supporter, a Durham player. You know, Newcastle have been taking players from them over the last couple of seasons. It's one which is really easy for Durham to get motivated for, probably more than Newcastle.
Players and staff. You're totally right, Jake. I mean, Durham are a great story. You know, they're not associated with a men's professional team like most clubs in the WSL and the Championship are. They're a great story of having to do things themselves, and they've had an absolutely fantastic start of the season. So, and yeah, the way they celebrated both the goal and then the win at the end showed how much it meant to them. It's not just players Newcastle have taken from them. They've also taken staff. So I'm sure that stung for them, but no. And yeah, fair play to them. They are a great story, Durham.
Yes, they are. That game culminated in a helter-skelter finale, both sides chasing the win rather than settling for the draw. And Durham got a sickening winner on 89 minutes, didn't they, George?
Yeah, horrible. And there were 6 minutes of injury time, and, you know, Newcastle pushed and pushed, but they couldn't do it. It was a very cruel way to lose. You know, they didn't take their chances. They created a load of chances, and they were unlike the men's team, Newcastle, you know, forced saves from the Durham keeper who played brilliantly. They just didn't convert, you know, as opposed to the men's team sort of not really having the chances in the first place. So it was a good, it was a kind of good lesson in that respect. It's still been a very, very good start for Newcastle. Mustn't forget that, but they're going to have to fight all the way. And yeah, it's Sunderland next weekend. What a game to go into from this one.
Absolutely. So where does that leave the Lasses? Literally speaking, it leaves them in sixth, but there's a huge game this Sunday. George asked Becky Langley if they can bounce straight back from this defeat, as they have done in the past.
Yeah, definitely. I think when you lose a game, you don't want that to become a hangover, and then you lose the next one. It starts to be a bit of a negative spiral. I think we've got to use that as fuel. Did we think we were going to win absolutely every single game in a long season? You know, we've got our own maturity around that, I guess. You know, it is what it is. It's football. It's not the first time we've lost a game. We use that as momentum now, and it stings, definitely. So we've got to use that bite to drive us into next week.
Does it feel like a step up, the Championship?
Yeah, definitely. The quality in the league is much higher, but the quality on our team is as well. So in terms of that, it does feel like a step up. But equally, I thought I genuinely thought we were the better team today. So unfortunately, we're just on the end of the wrong outcome.
Yeah, and I mean, you started well, Dunham started very well.
Yeah.
But from today's evidence, this isn't a division that you'd be fearful of, is it?
No, definitely not. I think, like, we do recognise that teams can drop points to everybody. You know, it was only Charlton who dropped points, you know, today. It was Birmingham who dropped points to Durham last week in terms of they lost 1-0 similar to us. So, yeah, I think the division has got quality at the top end and the bottom end, and we've just got to make sure we've got focus in each of those games.
I would just like to say one very quick thing after that, which was that our mate Amber Keegan-Stubbs was absolutely superb in that match. She's captain. I thought she controlled everything from midfield, really, just really good, and had a couple of great chances to score two, denied by the Durham keeper. It's definitely not the end of the world, this. You know, this is, you know, it's a steep learning curve, the Championship, but I think Newcastle have acquitted themselves very well so far.
Absolutely right. Then let's have a quick break, chaps, and we'll round things off when we come back.
I'm going to get me suit measured.
So let's take stock of everything. The Lasses have a huge game on Sunday, but obviously it's an international break for the men. And we, chaps, we have a live show to do in Gosforth, of all places. George Colkin, are you looking forward to the live show? What can we expect? Are you going to fire Chris out of a cannon? What's going to happen?
Well, I think we should expect the unexpected. I mean, you should always expect the unexpected. And the reason I say that is that we haven't given the live show a moment's thought. So, yeah. It's fair to say, yeah. Isn't it?
It should be interesting. Chris, is most of your family coming again this time?
Yeah, shipping them all in from all over the place. And yeah, because basically it takes place at the entrance to the grounds to Colkin Manor, which takes up sort of a third of Gosforth, doesn't it? So
true.
We'll have to see if they've got permission to enter the grounds and then go into the. But a lot of the WAFs are coming.
We have to watch out for George's gameskeeper, won't we?
Yeah, just to absolutely clear up that point straight away. No, you don't. That helps.
We don't have access to the facilities, George.
That's
no?
Absolutely correct.
Okay, lovely. Thanks for that. Jacob, your trash talk last week, it was unresolved, wasn't it? With two draws, of course, Steve Bruce rules apply. What are we going to do? How are we going to resolve this?
Everton won. I mean, like, that's all I can say. I mean, I disagree with...
Go back, Jacob. I'm sorry. Go back. Look how that result is listed. It's D. There may be an asterisk above the D. That's fine. But it's D. D for draw.
The official Barclays Women's Super League account says Blues win.
Right, well, I mean, what I said there may not be strictly accurate then, but no, Steve Bruce rules apply, so D, it was a draw.
We'll just have to settle it some other way.
Naked arm wrestling? I don't know. How will we do this?
Has everyone got their outfits planned for Friday? Chris, have you got the mankini washed, or...?
The one I wore last year? I'll have to find it. It'll be somewhere.
The black and white mankini.
Yeah, I'm having my lederhosen and chaps scraped off as we speak.
Oh, delightful. Beautiful. Jacob, you got anything lined up? Anything special?
Probably just a plaid shirt.
That's autumn. A plaid shirt always works. That's beautiful. Lovely stuff. So a little bit of chat this week about the stadium, Chris. Plans should become clear soon, apparently. Are we expecting a decision in 2025, or do we think...
Interesting way of putting it. Should they become clear, or should they become unclear soon?
I mean, I'll preface what I'm about to say by saying I'm pleased that Newcastle have said something on the matter and have written about this. But basically... there was a meeting of FAB, who is the fan advisory board for Newcastle United, with some Newcastle United officials last Monday. And at that, Brad Miller, who is the chief operating officer and is largely in control, or is leading the look for fresh to where Newcastle will improve their infrastructure, including stadium, whether they stay at St. James's Park, whether they move. He gave a detailed presentation to FAB, but what was released to the public was basically sort of 7 to 8 paragraphs of quotes from Brad Miller, the long and short of which is no decision has yet been taken. They say they've completed the first stage of the feasibility study, which started more than a year ago, and now they're in a stage where they're looking at both the opportunities and risks that they discuss in terms of the
possibilities. You know how many stages there are, Chris? There may be 250.
Well, exactly. Stages. Unclear on that front, because Darren Eales had said it was going to be imminent in July, and we've got to this stage. And instead, what they've said is that in early 2025, Newcastle hope to be entering the decision stage of the process. Not that they will actually reach a decision, that they'll reach the decision stage. Essentially, not that much further forward in terms of an answer, but at least Newcastle are saying this rather than just leave it so that the tires just kick down the road and they haven't said anything. Basically, there isn't going to be any affirmative decision before at least the start of 2025 on this, whether Newcastle stay at St James's Park, whether they improve and massively redraw St James's Park, extend, do with the bottom of it, or whether they were to think about moving stadium. All possibilities, they insist, remain open.
Yeah, I think we're all having flashbacks about the word imminent, aren't we? We dedicated about 200 podcasts during the takeover limbo about what was imminent and not. So apparently what was imminent was them saying something else. We'll talk about something else sometime next year. So that was the imminent, yeah. One thing that we should point out that we haven't really done is that we're recording on the third anniversary of the takeover. We haven't really discussed that today, but that is something that we're going to be talking about during our live show, reflecting on the good stuff, the bad stuff over the past 3 years. That seems like a more natural place to do that. But Chris and I have written a big piece on where things stand 3 years down the line. We've spoken to people inside the club at all levels of the club, trying to sort of draw some kind of conclusions, but also put things into perspective about how much has changed and how much there is still to do. But in terms of that sort of bigger picture, the big idea, as we refer to it, it is things like the stadium and the training ground, stuff that has been talked about for 3 years, but which really don't feel any closer to sort of actually happening. So that's something we've talked about. Would love people to have a read of that, see what they think. And the takeover 3 years on is something, as I said, that we'll be chatting about on Friday.
Lovely stuff. Right then, let's finish off, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, Jacob Whitehead.
Thank you. It was a stressful week, this one, but thankfully emerged with an aggregate win.
I'm going to ignore that. Chris, thank you very much for your time.
You're very, very welcome, and I shall see you all actually physically in person on Friday, which is,
God, that's worrying. That is terrifying.
Might arrive in a chariot at the bottom of Colchan Manor. And
why would you arrive in a chariot?
Because, I thought it had to be that grand to be allowed entry.
But I've already said you're not going to be allowed entry.
Just sit outside in my chariot then. Shout off.
In your chariot, strange. Yeah.
You'll come out, there'll be a clamp on your chariot if you park outside of Colchan Manor. That's the...
You'll need a bus because you're bringing your entire family as per usual. Didn't work out last time though, did it? Packing the audience with your family. You didn't get the sympathetic treatment you thought you might.
No, quite the opposite.
Yeah. Yes, the Waff Ultras will be out in force yet again. Thank you for your time as well, George Colchan, as always.
Yeah, it's been good and looking forward to this weekend. Let's see what mayhem we can create.
Absolutely. If you welcome the live show, we will see you on Friday. Enjoy. I hope you have a great week leading up to that. From everybody at Pod of the Time, thanks for listening yet again. We'll see you soon. Bye bye. And more generally, we are sixth. Are we happy with that, Jacob?
No comment.
God, I thought I could get you there. Thought I could pull you into that one.
We're actually seventh.
We're seventh. Right, let's do that again then.
The Athletic FC Podcast Network.